Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Thursday, December 2nd. Arden's Welling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, much to discuss. I don't even know where to start. Since we last recorded, we have seen a free agent frenzy across MLB as plenty of players have come off the board somewhat unexpectedly. The Blue Jays signed Kevin Gausman. Pretty big move. Robbie Ray is now a Seattle Mariner. Marcus Semien is a Texas Ranger. And as of this morning, the owners of MLB clubs have locked out the players. And websites across the internet, official club websites, now have pictures of like just baseballs and like bats and dudes that played 30 years ago, and no mention of the actual product that we all come to see, which is the players. It's a very strange world we found ourselves in. Considering all that, Ben, what's kind of on your mind after the last week? Like, what have you come away from all this craziness thinking about?
Oh man, so much to get to. Like, it's it really has been a wild week, and such a contrast too, right? I mean, as you mentioned, this morning, as we record this on Thursday, right after the lockout is implemented, like you say, you go to the St. Louis Cardinals 2022 giveaways, and it's like third baseman bobblehead or, you know, first baseman t-shirt giveaway day instead of Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. It really is a remarkable shift and such a contrast from where we were in the last week, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I think that from an entertainment standpoint, and we'll get to the Jays and, of course, how they fit into this, because they were pretty active. But, you know, league-wide, from an entertainment standpoint, this is as good as it gets. Like, this was awesome. The hot stove was really fun. It took me back a few years to before baseball became so slow with the offseason. And when the offseason, you know, has really become this slowed down, not very entertaining, drag out fight between, you know, players and owners, essentially. And this was awesome. It was such a great contrast and really enjoyable, I think, to observe.
And I guess my question off of that would be, why couldn't free agency always be like this? Like, why hasn't it always been? Like, why have we had this incredible slowdown in off seasons? And why haven't we had spending like this and flurries like this? Like, we know revenue has gone up across MLB year over year for like 10 years running up until 2020, obviously the COVID season, but like 10 years prior to that, revenue just continued increasing. So why hasn't free agency always been like this? Why haven't we seen spending like this?
I guess the answer must be that teams and players both think that they can gain something by waiting. You know, you think about Scott Boras on the player side, and typically this year is different, right? Because Scherzer and Semien and Seager, all these Boras clients have signed, but more often he will wait, and he waits because he believes, and the results certainly back this up, but he believes that his players can get more if they wait and if they really let the market settle and build more pressure on the owners. And then at the same time, you have teams like the Rays, for instance, who believe that they can gain leverage on players as they get closer to spring training. Players really want to have a destination for their families and for themselves, and that can lead to favorable deals for teams in some situations. So I think without this kind of pressure, for whatever reason, and it sucks the entertainment out of it, but I think both players and teams believe there can be something gained by waiting.
It's kind of what's been driving me nuts about, you know, just the beginning of the coverage of this lockout is, you know, juxtaposing it against the spending that we just saw in the free agent flurry that we just saw, and seeing some people suggesting, well, what, how could players be upset? Look at the amount of money that's being thrown around. Like, what, you know, every couple hours somebody's getting eight, nine figure contract. Like, what's the matter here? I mean, I just think that's the completely wrong read. Like, the read isn't that players should be satisfied because there's a lot of money being thrown around. The read is that owners could have always spent like this. Like, the read is that MLB revenue in 2019 was over $10 billion, and the percentage that the players have shared from that revenue has been decreasing since 2003. So, like, over those 10 years where revenue continued going up, player share continued going down. Like, That's the problem. This isn't even to mention like national TV deals that are over the next few years increasing from like $1.5 billion to $2 billion, or the revenue that owners have been pulling out of, you know, commercial real estate around their ballparks and their restaurants and parking garages, like all these ancillary revenue streams that don't get filed under baseball related revenue. Or, oh, by the way, the franchise values, which just continue increasing. It's an incredibly good investment to own an MLB franchise because there's only 30 of those things and they aren't producing any more of them. So, you know, I just think that, you know, for all those reasons, like you can miss me with the like, why are players complaining right now? Like, why are players upset with the system? Why are they dissatisfied with it? Everybody's getting paid. Well, like 12 to 24 guys got paid last week from a labor pool of 1,200. So, I just think it's skirting the issue entirely.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, right? 24 guys out of 1,200, it's a fraction. And, you know, anytime you're talking about, and, you know, I can even see it, you know, from either position, whatever you think about the owners, and there is no doubt that the owners are making money, you know, as you'd expect for any industry where, you know, you only have 30 competitors allowed in the market. Like if there were only 30 bakeries allowed in America, yeah, I'm pretty sure those bakeries would do well, you know? So these teams are in a great position and they do make a lot of money, but regardless of which side you're on, this is the chance to reset. And it seems as though both owners and players want some changes implemented. So for them to implement those changes, this is the chance to do it. And with that, you know, there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of push-pull and there are a lot of variables too. So it's not just a tug of war along one axis. They are pushing and pulling in different ways at different times, very complex. And I think ultimately we will see an agreement reached. Like I'm not worried based on the conversations I've had that we're going to miss time in 2022, but it's going to take some time for this thing to play out.
Yeah, like a baseball team, like it's an entertainment product, right? So you're like, oh, if there was only 30 bakeries, like maybe it's better to say like, oh, if there are only like 30 bands in the world that you could go see, you know, like there are only 30 movies. That's it. They're not making any more movies.
Exactly.
There's only 30 of them. Like, wow, sign me up to be producing one of those movies.
Exactly. Even the worst of those movies is probably going to have at least some sort of niche audience. And you're right. It is movies is like a better example, right? And then you get to the blockbuster territory. People just want to watch a blockbuster. So it might not be as good as it could be, but man, people are going to flock to it. So that's what Major League Baseball is. There are laws in place. Like if some billionaire like Mark Cuban decided that he wanted to add a team to Major League Baseball, he cannot do that without first paying expansion fees. And second, and maybe more challenging and more important, getting the approval from Major League Baseball's very insular group of owners. You have to basically say that you're going to play by their rules if you want to join that club.
Yeah, that's a tough club to join. Absolutely. So, and you're right. There are like terrible movies out there and there are terrible baseball teams like Baltimore, and, you know, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, like clubs that are, you know, their payrolls right now stand around $40-50 million. I mean, each MLB club brings in $50 million alone from like shared revenue from national TV contracts. If that's not their local TV, which is another, I don't know, $30-50 million. That's just shared revenue from national TV contracts. So they're spending less on payroll than they are getting just in shared revenue from TV. Like that's the problem. Like it's such a mistake to look at, you know, Corey Seager getting paid and Max Scherzer getting paid and to say, oh, the system's fine. Like it's fine for that top 1%, but there is an entire middle class of players here. Like this bargaining is not for the best players in the game. Like it is for the late bloomers who don't hit free agency until into their 30s when players don't get paid anyway. Like it's for guys who suffer major injuries early in their careers, you know, major injuries when they're in the minors, when they're in their early 20s, that delay the beginning of their major league careers, that delay their service time beginning. Like I think it's like the bargaining is for like players like that, you know, relievers just in general, right? You know, it's just like classes of players that teams have decided they are not going to, you know, there isn't value in giving them, you know, in giving them salaries that match the, you know, what they're producing on the field. So, you know, it's not the Seegers and the Scherzers. It's like it's the Matt Moores and the Paul DeJongs. Like, it's those serviceable middle class MLBers who aren't really seeing a fair share of the pie. And I think that's what this bargaining's about.
Yeah, as it should be, right? I mean, collective bargaining. They're bargaining as a collective, and they're trying to do what's best for that overall population. And of course, the leaders tend to be guys like Scherzer and Semien, who have a lot of experience and clout and success on the field. But they really do look at it as a group, and that requires some creativity. And, you know, this is a stage where a lot of different things have been floated. Everything from, you know, you replace arbitration with a war system, or you expand the playoffs to 14 teams. And, you know, we'll see. Ultimately, this is a good time to explore some of those creative things. But at the same time, if you look back at the collective agreements over the course of the last 30 years, oftentimes the changes are more incremental. It's not that they totally turn everything on its head and, you know, service time is out the window and we're going by age now. I think service time is going to stay. Like, I think that, you know, usually the changes are more gradual, but that doesn't mean there isn't a chance for some real creativity here and some real change.
Totally. And my last thing I'll say on this is, one thing I'd like to see come out of the CBA that will never come out of the CBA or ever come ever is a COTS baseball contracts for owners. Like, you know, Yeah. You see, like, there's a sticker shock to, you know, the Texas Rangers spending $500 million on their middle infield, and Corey Seager having $325 million. Like, all right, let's see, like, what Steve Cohen made last year. Like, let's see, like, how much passive income came from his enormous investment portfolio. Like, let's see if Steve Cohen wants to give Max Scherzer $43 million to pitch for him next year, he just grabs, like, a Jackson Pollock off the wall. Here you go. This is actually tax-free and worth more than $43 million, and it's going to appreciate in value, and it just hangs on a wall in my house. So, I'd love to see, you know, a reflection of ownership earnings, just so there isn't as much attention paid to, wow, these, you know, players are getting paid, like the 1% of players, 12 out of 1,200 are getting paid. It's a massive difference.
Yeah, for sure. Those books would certainly be interesting. I'm not holding my breath to see what those look like, because usually those are kept very much behind closed doors. But you're right. There's no doubt that, Major League Baseball is a very, very lucrative business to be in. And I don't think this lockout is going to change that. I do think that there's going to be resolution, and this lockout will be slightly damaging, obviously, from an optic standpoint and from a narrative standpoint. But as long as they don't miss games, then there's a chance to come out of this in a good spot.
Yes. And that's the other thing as well, right? Like, if you miss games, who does that hurt most? I think that actually hurts players more than owners, right? Like, that's why I think we have a lockout here. Where do owners make the majority of their money? From massive postseason national television deals. Where do players make their money? Playing regular season games. Something to keep in mind, that, you know, missing regular season games hurts players more than it hurts owners, really, is just something to keep from, you know, in the back of your head as this continues. You want to talk about Kevin Gausman? Kevin Gausman's a Toronto Blue Jay. System worked well for Kevin Gausman. 5 years, $110 million for a guy who was non-tendered 2 years ago. It's a crazy thing. After 2019, like, to the day, December 2nd, 2019, to the day, Kevin Gausman was not tendered a contract. Any club in baseball could have signed him. Blue Jays tried to sign him, were unsuccessful. Kevin Gausman went to the San Francisco Giants, had himself a nice season. So nice that the Giants qualified him, gave him a qualifying offer. Again, Blue Jays circled back around and said, hey, would you like to be a Toronto Blue Jay now? We think you're going to get even better than you were in 2020. And Kevin Gausman made the, in hindsight, excellent decision to bet on himself, take that qualifying offer, pitched another season for the Giants. First half of the year was like running away with the Cy Young Award. Second half of the year, not quite so great, ran into some tough home run luck. You know, it was like a 4.4 ERA over the second half and a 1.7 ERA over the first half. But all in all, he ends up with a fine season and a fine contract for himself. Your thoughts on Kevin Gausman and the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, it's a good fit. I mean, I don't know about you. I wasn't like shocked when this news started breaking. Because, as you said, I mean, they've liked him for so long. I mean, didn't you predict at one point that Gausman was going to be traded to the Jays?
I said they were going to trade for him, like, going into the 2021 season when we all thought the Giants weren't going to be good. And then the Giants ended up winning, like, 109 games. But at the time, looking at the Giants roster, nobody expected that that was going to be like the best team in baseball. So that's why I thought he'd be traded to the Jays at the deadline.
And then here he is a few months later. So, I mean, it's not shocking that they liked him. They've obviously liked him for a long time. The deal, 22 times five, I mean, pretty reasonable. I think that he's certainly getting well compensated. At the same time, it's not this sort of deal that will singularly hamstring the Blue Jays if it turns out that he's injured and misses time, whatever the case. More likely, he's healthy and he's able to use that splitter down in the zone and the fastball up in the zone, as you wrote about, and really be an effective starting pitcher for a long period of time. So I think it's a good move. Clearly, they're better with Kevin Gausman. He's a really good major league pitcher. You would still expect that to be the case as he moves into his early 30s. And he joins a group that's starting to look really strong. So, big picture, first impression, it's a good deal. He's a really good player and he helps the Blue Jays rotation.
Yeah, it's cool to look at some of the adjustments they've made over the last couple of seasons and how that's unlocked a lot for him. And I'm sure that these are some of the adjustments the Blue Jays were going to suggest to him if he had signed with them in 2019 and even in 2020 going forward. Some of the pitch usage to righties, started using his splitter a lot more to them, kind of moved the location of his splitter to righties a little bit more as well. Like, instead of kind of like trying to basically attack the corners with it, he's just kind of left it over the heart of the plate and let its natural action just carry it beneath the zone. It's made it a lot more effective because Gausman was for a long time this kind of bizarre reverse splits guy. His splitter worked really effectively against left-handers and righties were kind of getting to him, and now he has equalized that a lot more, where he's as effective against right-handers as against left-handers. Also embrace pitching up in the zone with his heater. And he can get a lot of a pretty surprising amount of swing and miss on his fastball up in the zone. It's not a Robbie Ray fastball, right? It's not an overpowering thing. It's, 94, 95. It's got some okay movement to it, probably above average life, but it's not, an elite MLB weapon like his splitter is. His splitter is one of legitimately the best pitches in the game. His fastball by today's MLB standards, kind of ordinary, but he gets a lot of swing and miss with it. It's really effective because he's just started elevating with it and using it up. So you think about you got the fastball up in the zone, the splitter is going down, tailing down beneath the zone. You're just creating so much separation there. If you are repeating your delivery, staying strong through your pitching motion, repeating your arm angle and your release point, you create that deception. As a hitter, you don't know what you're getting. The two pitches look exactly the same until it's too late. And by the time you recognize the movement or the 10-mile-per-hour velocity discrepancy, I mean, it's too late to execute a swing. So for a lot of hitters, you're kind of just left guessing. And then even when you do guess correctly, which you will, it's a 50-50 proposition. You'll probably guess correctly sometimes. You still got to try to hit this splitter that's dropping a foot, or this fastball that is up at the letters that you're still round object versus round object. It's still going to be really hard to execute on that. So I think that's why Kevin Gausman has had a lot of the success he's had, is just making those adjustments. It'll be kind of interesting if the Blue Jays can even carry that process a bit further. And if there is even some more upside to tap into here with Kevin Gausman and some more to unlock, so that maybe he doesn't suffer maybe some of the struggles that he did over the second half last season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the results have been great, like you say, with that two-pitch mix. I think, at this point, if he's just who he is, I think you're thrilled with that. in comparison to, say, a Yimi Garcia, who we'll get to, and you look at him and the spin and the velo there, and you think, okay, maybe there really is another level that he could get to. Whereas with Gausman, I think, if he kind of holds this 50-50 fastball split, throw in a few pitches to keep hitters guessing, you're thrilled with that. And it's a proven model and it works. And it's interesting too, because, obviously he signed here basically the same day, I think it was the same day, that Robbie Ray signed in Seattle.
Ray was the next day, maybe. It wasn't
maybe the next day.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
Yeah, within a 24-hour window, yeah, exactly. Basically. And, you're looking at two pitchers who use, in some ways, a similar approach. I mean, with Ray, obviously lefty-righty, but Ray, you've got the slider, and then Gausman, you got the splitter, and a lot of fastballs, and it works great for them. And maybe in an era where pitchers aren't going eight innings, they're not necessarily going to face hitters, three times in a game quite as often as they would have in the past, well, you don't necessarily need those third and fourth pitches to keep the opponents off balance. If it works two times through, get through six innings, you're good to go. So in that sense, there's a comparison. And even the contract terms are kind of similar. But I would just note here that, you know, with Ray, he got a three, the way I see it, what Robbie Ray got is a three-year deal with a two-year player option. Yeah. And that's very different than a five-year deal. You know, it's framed by the Mariners as a five-year contract with an opt-out after three, but that's essentially a three-year deal with a two-year player option.
From a club's perspective, how do you think you value that option? Like, what number could you even put on that? You know, because you think about the draft pick compensation that, like, the Mariners are going to be paying here. Like, I know there's like a $7 million value on that, somewhere around that realm. What value do you think is on the opt-out?
I think it's a lot. Like, right? I think, you know, yeah, like a substantial, maybe comparable to that $7 million figure. Like, would you rather have Gausman, for instance, at 100 over five, but he has an opt-out after 3 years? Or would you rather just pay him 110 over five?
Yeah.
Like, that might be a roughly comparable, and I'm just pulling this out of nowhere, but that might be a roughly comparable contract, really. I mean, it's a substantial value.
Totally. And that's why I think, like, there's more than meets the eye with just the 5 years 110, 5 years 115 that you see just on the sticker for these contracts. Like, there's a lot more beneath it that's really changes the values. There's tax differences between the, you know, where Robbie Ray's playing and where Kevin Gausman is playing. And, like, that's a factor. Like you think Marcus Semien for $175 million in the state of Texas, no income tax state. Like, for the Blue Jays to match that playing in Toronto, it's well over $200 million with the tax savings that Marcus Semien's going to have in Texas. Good luck, right? Like, I don't want to compare Ray and Gausman because it feels lazy, right? Like, it just, like, it feels too obvious, but they're so damn similar, like you said, you know, like, just the way they pitch, they're the same age. They both overcame, like, significant struggles throughout their 20s, and then something clicked right around 30. All of a sudden, they realized this potential that we've all seen that they've long had, but they were never able to fulfill. They became, like, legitimate, like, top of the rotation dudes. Like, there are so many similarities there. But then because of that, I've been thinking a lot about two-pitch pitchers, right? And, like, why don't we see more two-pitch pitchers? Like, why don't we see more guys that, like, have this approach? Like, well, for starters, Robbie Ray's slider and Kevin Gausman's splitter are, like, elite, right? Like, not a lot of guys throw pitches like those two. So, if, like, if your pitch is that good and that, like, downright unhittable when it's on, like, that allows you to pitch in this fashion because, like, guys can't hit it when it's working. But then also I kind of thought, like, well, if you're, say, like, you're a righty who is just kind of like sinker slider, and then you got a change up you use against lefties, right? To kind of neutralize that side of the platoon. Well, aren't you kind of like a two-pitch pitcher in a way? Because, like, you're throwing sinkers and sliders to right-handers and sinkers and change ups to lefties. So you're like, I think there are actually kind of a lot more two-pitch pitchers than we actually really realize. Like, take like Alek Manoah, right? Like, it's kind of like fastball slider to righties, and I know he uses a slider to lefties, but like a lot of fastball changeup to lefties as well, right? So it's kind of like, is Alek Manoah not kind of a two-pitch pitcher as well? There's a lot more pitchers who pitch this way just because they have certain, you know, weapons that they use against certain sides of the platoon. They might not have like the plus weapon that, you know, Robbie Ray and you know, I don't know, like Dylan Cease like have, right? Like with his slider, like the approach obviously works for them. But I do think two pitch pitchers are, it's a bit more common than maybe we think. I've been thinking about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, you're not going to see, there are a lot of starters out there who are just not going to throw a lot of right on right changeups, for instance.
Yeah.
You know? So then essentially they're against a right-handed hitter. They're throwing fastballs up, sliders down. Maybe you throw a curve in there to keep them off balance once in a while, try to sneak a first pitch strike, but like you're not seeing a ton of variability there. So yeah. And you know, with Gausman, like the splitter kind of functioning like a changeup in some ways. So then he would be throwing right on right changeups as well as obviously the lefties. Probably a reason that reverse split existed is because the splitter is so good against the left-handed swing. And you know, now it's just working in all areas for him. It's definitely an interesting kind of observation there.
You mentioned how kind of closely together these signings came. Like, do you think the Blue Jays made a choice here in that we prefer Kevin Gausman to Robbie Ray, or is that mischaracterizing it?
It's a good question. Clearly, they really liked Kevin Gausman. I mean, that's apparent. I think they legitimately liked Ray, too. I mean, sometimes there are other factors, too. Like, I haven't had the chance to go back and listen to his introductory press conference with the Mariners, but, you know, maybe he wanted to be in the States. Maybe he wanted to be in Seattle. There could be other reasons. You know, Toronto, as Kevin Gausman was talking about just the other day, and he was framing this in a really, you know, not in a negative way, but the reality is that there are certain restrictions, whether it's you have to go through customs, you have to get passports for your family. The COVID thing is real too, right? Like yep. Where even if it's not the player themselves, any guests that they have coming to Toronto would have to be vaccinated, right? So you're looking at just logistical hoops that exist for the Blue Jays that don't necessarily exist elsewhere.
Maybe I tip my hand, but I think it is a mischaracterization to say that like the Blue Jays chose Kevin Gausman over Robbie Ray. Like I think they liked both players. And I think the Blue Jays would have happily brought back Robbie Ray. They're clearly negotiating with both players simultaneously. And like it's funny, right? Like we compare free agency to a grocery store on this podcast, right?
Yes. But we certainly do.
You're not literally standing in the cereal aisle able to choose whichever box you want. Like some of the boxes are out of reach. Some of the boxes aren't accessible. Some of them don't fit in your cart. Some of them aren't ready to be purchased. Some of them aren't on sale yet, right? Like what I'm saying is like the player has the choice in free agency. It's not just like the team could sign anybody that they want. Like the player has to be motivated to sign, motivated to come to your market. They have to want to take your money. There are, like I mentioned, the different tax situations and, you know, different like opt-outs and like all the different kind of things that can move the values of contracts around and, you know, maybe a bit more than meets the eye than just the literal term and literal dollars. And like the Blue Jays don't make free agent moves unilaterally. Like there has to be willingness on the other side. So I think that sometimes when you're looking at two players in free agency who are maybe somewhat similar in a similar tier and you like both of them, I think occasionally rubber just meets the road and one guy is just ready to move and the other guy maybe is still having a little bit of hesitation. And if you wait too long for somebody else to make a decision or to make a move, well, then maybe you end up missing out on both because the other guy that you like has other options. Like Kevin Gausman had other options as well. Like it's kind of like a bird in the hand versus the one in the bush sort of situation. And I just think that at the time that this went down, like there was a belief that Robbie Ray maybe wanted more term, maybe was going to wait until after the lockout to sign. And like you also had obviously this lockout kind of hanging over everything, like creating this artificial pressure. And you mentioned it, like the Mariners process with Robbie Ray by all accounts was pretty quick. that happened pretty last minute. So I think there's, you know, more than meets the eye here than just the Blue Jays picking one guy over the other.
And I think there's a little bit of almost like revisionist history that I see a little bit on Twitter, which, you know, dangerous place to draw your conclusions from. But I see a little bit of like, oh, you know, like whatever, Robbie Ray, like it's fine. You know, Jay's got Gausman, no big deal. And I mean, it's worth noting. He was the Cy Young winner this past year. Like, you know, if the Jays had been in a playoff game and Robbie Ray had been on the mound, I think Blue Jays fans would have been thrilled and rightfully so. Robbie Ray was unbelievable this year. He was so good. And in my opinion, he is going to be nasty in 2022. He is going to be an ace. In my opinion, he's going to be better than Kevin Gausman next year. Now, here's the thing. Fastball slider, you lose like 1 or 2 miles per hour. There is some risk there. And long term, especially with the opt-out, I legitimately think that the Gausman deal is as good or close to as good as the Ray deal. Although I will say that I had some agents reach out on the Ray deal, kind of know like, man, that's a little light for Robbie Ray, right?
I thought so.
And yeah, I think it did seem a little light. I know the opt-out's there. You know, 115 for a guy who just won the Cy Young isn't, I thought he might have had a case for 140 over six or 150 over six. And then again, it's not all about money. He's happy in Seattle, good for him. What an amazing, you know, contract and turnaround. And, you know, Robbie Ray's in a great spot. But, you know, you look at these things, and I just would veer away from the revisionist history. Like, Robbie Ray is really good. He's going to help the Mariners. He is, like, he's a great pitcher. I wouldn't want to just, like, brush him aside as, like, a non-factor here.
Yeah, literally the best pitcher in the American League this season, as recent as it gets. And yeah, I thought his turns were a little light. And then obviously, like, the draft pick, you know, that depresses his market a little bit. You know, like all the other things that we've kind of been talking about. But I do wonder if there was a little strain of clubs wondering how sustainable what Robbie Ray does.
Oh, no doubt.
Right?
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I wonder if that is reflected in some of the like interest and offers that he was able to get. Because like you said, like, yeah, I agree with you. I think Robbie Ray will probably be better than Kevin Gausman in 2022. All things being equal, I think so. But who do you think, Ben, will be better in 2024, I guess, is the question.
I think Gausman, honestly. Yeah. I think Gausman, you know, 3-4 years out, I think it's him. But yeah, that 2022 matters a lot. It matters a ton for both the Mariners and the Jays. Like Ray is probably more of like an ace than Gausman or than even Berríos. And I know where I land on this, but you know, what do you think about the question of, you know, do the Blue Jays need an ace? Because now they got Berríos, Manoah, Ryu, Pearson, Stripling back there. Of course, Gausman. That's a really good group. Maybe doesn't have a traditional number one.
I guess like what's an ace? Like how do you quantify that, right? Like what's an ace? You know?
Yeah.
Because like, I don't know, man. Kevin Gausman over the last 2 years has like a 3 ERA and hasn't missed a start. So I don't know. It's kind of ace like. I don't know when you cross that threshold into acedom. Like there's some teams.
And Berríos is close.
There's some teams that just have like one really good pitcher and then their other four guys are kind of mediocre. And it's like, oh, that really good guy is like, he's our ace. But I don't know, maybe he's got like a 3.5 ERA, right? Which is fine. But like he's, I don't know, that's not Garrett Cole. Like that's not Scherzer, right? Like that's, you know, pick your guy. So I don't know like what an ace is. Like I think the Blue Jays just need to layer in as many like quality options as possible. And I think they'll actually layer in another one after the lockout and like just continue to build out their depth of their staff. Because like, as we know, you don't just use five starters over the course of a season. So yeah, give me, you know, kind of a quantity of good arms rather than like one super arm who is like, yep, that's my ace. And then everyone else is just kind of running the mill.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And, you know, maybe I am underselling Gausman and Berríos because maybe they are aces by some definitions. But no, I mean, you look at the Giants last year and they didn't necessarily, Gausman was their ace and they were one of the best teams in baseball. So, I mean, I think that says it all. I think you'd rather beat them than the 2021 Mets where they have DeGrom and, you know, just not enough support or depth behind. And absolutely, the Jays are still trying to add more. I had someone suggest that the Jays were working in trade on a starter this week pretty actively. Obviously, that hasn't happened, so we'll have to wait and see where that leads. But I definitely don't think they're done. More likely a back-end type of starter, but I don't think they're done in the rotation.
Yeah, like among qualified starters across MLB in 2021, Kevin Gausman had the 6th best ERA, right?
Yeah.
Corbin Burnes, Max Scherzer, Walker Buehler, Brandon Woodruff, Zach Wheeler, Kevin Gausman. Man. Robbie Ray right behind Gausman at 284. Gausman is at 281. So like, I don't know, I guess that's ace level.
Yeah. No, it is. Maybe, yeah. Why don't I consider him an ace then? Maybe it's because we saw him in the AL East for so long and, you know, he kind of took him a while to grow into it. But no, you know, maybe he's gotten there.
Well, and he kind of had this weird year, right? Like is like I was alluding to earlier, like he was like legit, like running away with the Cy Young Award over the first half. Then over the second half, it was like the ball started to leave the yard a bit more. The like second half ERA is like 4-4, right? Like that's probably not nice, but like it was a rough go. But I think that you look at some of the home run luck, and I think you look at the fact his strikeout rate was steady the entire time. Walk rate actually decreased, and Kevin Gausman never been a guy who like walks a ton of dudes. Like the stuff was like crisp and effective. Like I think that there are a ton of indicators that suggest Kevin Gausman is more of the first half guy than the second half guy. What he really is probably like the 3 ERA guy that he's been since the beginning of 2020. Durable, high strikeout rate, manageable walk rate with like an elite splitter. So like I think he's got all the tools to continue being that 3 ERA guy going forward. That's probably where I would like project him next season. It would be like 170 innings at 3 ERA off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean you look at FIP and XFIP, like they back it up. They say that what he was doing the last 2 years was sustainable. And you know, you do look at the projections. don't have it in front of me, but yeah, it is around that. Like the projections really like Kevin Gausman. So that's, I'm sure that figured into the Blue Jays decision making. I mean, to go for a guy that the numbers really like, the stuff is there. They talk about character all the time. And certainly Gausman made a good impression, said all the right things in his press conference on Wednesday. And seems really excited to come back to the AL East, which is not something every starting pitcher wants to do.
Well, and I think Steamer isn't excited that he's going back to the AL East because they've got him at 188 innings, but a 3.87 ERA. So okay. They've got him as a 3.5 win pitcher. And they got like a few more walks in there and a few less strikeouts. Like, look, he's going to some tougher environments. Certainly he's going to be facing some. I mean, look, he had some tough opposition in like the, you know, NL West where he was playing the Dodgers all the time, the Padres, like, you know, he was playing tough lineups, but like obviously the AL East is a different animal and the offensive environments are going to be a bit tougher. But yeah, you mentioned like the clubhouse stuff as well, I think is like, that's important here, right? Like that's part of the deal. Like the Blue Jays don't give out this kind of money to people who they don't think are going to be good parts of their culture and who they don't think are going to fit with like kind of the young core that has really developed its own sort of vibe in the Blue Jays clubhouse and its own sort of way of doing things. Like they don't want to disrupt that in a major way. So and I think that, you know, having a Kevin Gausman around, like that can be good for a Nate Pearson who is kind of going through a Kevin Gausman situation right now. Like he's kind of going through a Kevin Gausman arc where it's like super high top prospect. Gausman was like number 4 in the draft, like top of prospect lists, all that stuff. Pearson, top prospect, reached the majors, struggles, right? Like tough times, injuries, kind of going through it. Delivery is not where it needs to be. Like Kevin Gausman went through all of these things. So, you know, like Nate Pearson with similar pedigree, similar talent, similar expectations, the age of 25, I think he could probably learn a lot from Kevin Gausman. And I think Kevin Gausman is just like a walking, breathing reminder that it doesn't always go like it went for Alek Manoah. Like for a guy like Nate Pearson, like you don't write a guy off at 25, you know, banish him to the bullpen and like turn away all that upside and all that potential as a starter just because he didn't realize it immediately as he reached the big leagues. Like there are plenty of big league starters who don't figure it out until their late 20s or their 30s. Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman, just like prime examples and prime models of like kind of the perseverance and determination and like professionalism that it kind of takes to reach that point and then get yourself to, you know, a place where you are fulfilling that potential and doing what, you know, people maybe unfairly expected you to do immediately upon reaching the highest level of competition in the world.
Sometimes it takes a while. And, you know, another name we haven't even mentioned, Steven Matz, right? Like it, yeah. He's had some ups and downs. He, you know, didn't reach the same heights that a Gausman or a Ray did, more of a back end starter, but should mention too, he got a really nice deal from the Cardinals. Really
great deal.
Really nice deal.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that if you're the Jays, I don't think you're necessarily like wishing that you had him for 44 over 4. If you're the Mets, clearly Steve Cohen did wish that he had him for that price. Yep. And that led to a whole thing before. And the Mets has since signed like 4 players, including Max Scherzer. So they're going to be fine. They're going to be better than fine. But yeah, the Mets thing was interesting. And he's a guy that we've talked about a lot on this podcast this year. Good for him for getting that deal. Honestly, I think the Blue Jays are better off trying to find the next Steven Matz and doing that, taking a little less certainty, taking a little more risk, but doing it at a lower cost. I think that makes sense as opposed to, I just think 44 over 4 for a fifth starter. I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't love it from like a, you know, front office perspective. I love it from a like health of the game perspective. That'd be great.
Yeah.
That's no, the going yeah. rate for fifth starters. Yeah. Fantastic, right? Like perfect.
John Gray, 56 over 4. Okay. I mean, that's
sure.
Yeah. All right.
Right? Like, no, yeah. Like, do I think like the Rockies completely bungled the John Gray situation by like A, not trading him at the deadline, B, not extending him, C, not giving him a qualifying offer, and then just losing the quote unquote asset for nothing? Yeah, that is bad quote unquote asset management. Great for John Gray. Great for fifth starters across the league. Like all these teams that, you know, some of the sticker shock from some of these contracts, right? It's like, oh, the Rangers spent what on Marcus Semien and Corey Seager and their team's not even that good. What are they doing? I don't know. They're trying to win. Like they're spending
yeah,
money.
No, good for them.
This is
yeah.
good. They're trying to win. This is what you want. Like you don't want the like Baltimore Orioles who, you know, when's the last time they meaningfully were in free agency. I'm not talking Rougned and Odor here, right? Like, when's the last time they were like meaningful players in free agency? So give me the Rangers spending a bunch of money. Give me the Mets spending way past the CBT and pretending the CBT doesn't even exist. Great. Perfect. Put pressure on other clubs to do the same thing. Like, team spending money is a good thing. It shouldn't always be this, oh, what are they doing with their payroll? Oh, how are they going to fit all these pieces? Like, who cares? You get Steven Matz on this 4-year, you know, $44 million, was it, deal? Great. Great for Steven Matz. Great for fifth starters. I hope we see more like that and more players getting paid.
For sure. And, you know, we'll see where the Blue Jays spend the rest of their money. I kind of think, you know, infield is the next big piece for them. But we'll see where it all goes.
Let's talk about it after the break. Blue Jays still have work to do, and so do we. So we'll talk about all that so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters, Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. And Ben, feel like we mostly covered starting pitching for this club. You know, we understand that Blue Jays are going to look to add another back end type to this rotation. Kind of tough by a free agency right now. Most guys are off the board. You could look at like a Yusei Kikuchi or like a Tyler Anderson or Danny Duffy or what have you. Could come via trade, as you mentioned. Blue Jays active in trade negotiations towards the lockout deadline. There, it's funny, man. Like, clubs are gonna have basically 2 months, hopefully 2 months, or they can't talk to players, they can't engage with their own players, they can't talk to free agents. Clubs are just going to be like exchanging trade proposals endlessly for 2 months. So we might see this crazy flurry of trade activity coming out of the lockout, whenever that is. And I wonder if that's how the Blue Jays sort of find their infielder that they still very much need.
So this has been a question that I've had. Is I'm not even sure if teams can talk to one another during the lockout about trades.
Why wouldn't executives be allowed to talk to each other? They're not in the union.
They're not in the union. Right. They're certainly allowed to work. In fact, they're not allowed to not work. They have to show up and, you know, do their preparation for the season. So internally, they can obviously have all the talks that they want. I am not convinced, and I haven't seen an official league edict on this, but I am not convinced that they are able to talk trades with one another. And any time that I've asked people with teams like for clarity on any stuff around this, it's very cagey, the responses I get. Like, people do not want to say anything. And I think that's, you know, reading between the lines, I think that's basically the league mandating, do not fall out of line here, and telling the executives, do not get us in trouble, do not give the other side ammunition for a potential lawsuit.
Well, teams have been told like very directly, do not talk about players at all. To us, certainly. So I don't know if that, like, I think that front offices would be smart enough to do like the MLB.com thing where it's like, hey, would you talk about veteran Puerto Rican catcher? And then like, oh yeah, you know, actually there is, you know, whatever, like, you know, 22-year-old Cuban left fielder that could be right? Like, they could get around it that way.
Yeah.
Not using names.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could right. Get around it that way. I guess it depends on, like, is that sanctioned? Like, if you're Ross Atkins, are you then encouraging your baseball operations people to have covert discussions with their peers around the league? Like, at a certain point, it kind of starts to seem risky, you know? Like, so I wonder if it's just, you know what, we're really going to lock it down and just keep it all internal and come up with our kind of valuations and priority list internally. But I'm honestly not sure. But that is one of the questions I've really been asking this week.
I do think there is still a trade to come for the Blue Jays when this lockout is over. And so maybe it's not the second the lockout finishes, and maybe those trade discussions pick back up rather quickly when it does. But like, I just think that is the way that the Blue Jays address their next most pressing need, and that's on the infield. Because you kind of look at what's left in free agency. Carlos Correa seems like it's probably, the bidding's going to go to a level the Blue Jays might be uncomfortable with.
I don't see him coming to Toronto.
Right.
If he's making 350, I don't see it.
kind of wonder how much interest there would be in a Trevor Story. Like, there's so many different ways you can kind of paint his statistical profile and like this, the, you know, career that he's had. I don't know if there'd be too much interest there. Like, yeah, I think Chris Bryant would make a ton of sense. But you know, again, the bidding for him when the lockout is done might get a little crazy, man. So, and then beyond that, you're talking about like outfielders, like Nick Castellanos and, you know, Michael Conforto. And now you're looking at subtracting via addition. And I think there is a way where, you know, there's a trade to be made where like there's a pretty decent piece coming off the big league roster, moving out in trade, and the Blue Jays addressing another need and kind of moving things around. And in the end, they have given up a guy who might project for, you know, 3-4 wins, but they end up taking their total win projection up via this trade, via moving these puzzle pieces around. So I think that's a possibility. But yeah, I know I've said this a million times on the podcast, but I still really think that a trade is the way that the Blue Jays are going to solve some of their unresolved needs going into 2022.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, you've got probably, you know, the infielder is a big one. They need to add an infielder. I mean, it's not a question. Maybe two, like you could make an argument for two, but you have to add one. And then back end starter, that's at least like pretty high on the list. I don't know if it's an absolute must. Like, you could enter the season with Stripling and Pearson and maybe a minor league signing or two, but I think they would much prefer to trade for someone. And you look at, you know, there's still, partly because it was so wild in free agency, there's still a lot of trade options out there, right? Whether it's, you know, in Oakland, Bassett and Montas and Manaea, Cincinnati's got their arms. So there's the possibility, whenever it's possible, for some trades on that front. But, you know, one way or another, they have to continue adding relatively big pieces to this team. I mean, they're not where they need to be. They've added some more than decent players to this roster, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And I do think, yeah, one of it probably gets done by trade. One of those moves probably happens in free agency. And then maybe you add, you know, some more bullpen help on lower level deals, and there's your offseason.
Yeah, the back end starter thing can kind of be a bit of a back burner concern right now, because like, yeah, there are still a couple guys in free agency. You could go like trade for a Merrill Kelly. You can solve that. You can figure that out closer to spring training. The bullpen's an interesting one that you just raised, and we haven't even talked about Yimi García yet, who the Blue Jays have like signed and added to this bullpen mix in a multi-year deal. A little bit of a departure from how we've seen the Blue Jays typically build out their bullpens. Like, we're so used to seeing this front office kind of like just cobble together a bunch of guys towards the end of free agency, some of them on minor league deals, some of them on like very low cost, like 1-year deals at the major league level. Now you're looking at a bit more of an established group when you layer in García with like a Romano and, you know, with like a Richards and a Simber and obviously a Tim Mesa. Julian Merriweather is going to factor in there somewhere, health assuming, but like he's out of options. He's not a guy you're going to want to expose, you know, to being picked up on waivers. Like, you can kind of see this group taking shape. And I think García sort of fits into the role that David Phelps, who's also now back with the organization on the minor league deal, kind of filled in April and very early May before he got hurt last season. He kind of pitches the seventh inning for you, you know, seventh inning with the lead. That's your guy. And García kind of bridges you towards your back end arms. And I think that was a huge part of this bullpen, that David Phelps role that was hugely missed when Phelps went down. And that's why you had to go out and get a Simber and a Richards, because you were losing games at that juncture reliably. So I think García steps into that role.
Yeah, no, I think seventh inning is where he fits. Like, I know he's closed before. I don't see him as a ninth inning guy. He's a good reliever. I don't see him as a great reliever based on the results, right? Like, we're not talking about someone who's utterly dominant and who strikes out, you know, 36, 37% of the hitters he faces. He's useful. He's helpful. And, you know, there was some thought, even, you know, again, I had another agent reach out, not involved with the deal, and thought the Jays got a really good deal on this. Really liked that the Jays got him for 11 over 2 with also a club option, or club vesting option. That's in there as well. So there was some thought that it was a good move. But of course, he's got to produce on the field. And I think that role for him is the seventh inning. I think that's, you know, still Jordan Romano in the ninth inning, still Tim Mesa probably in a setup role. And, it does start to get a little bit stronger. You know, when you're looking at a full season of Simber, full season of Trevor Richards, you're looking at a decent group, but in my opinion, you still have to add. Doesn't have to be major league deals, doesn't have to be big names, but you still have to add.
Well, and I think there could be more upside with Garcia too, right? Like, he's got kind of like a funny career. If you could get him back to 2019, Yimi Garcia, then all of a sudden you're looking at, yeah, back end dude. Like, you're looking at a guy who you can use if Jordan Romano's arm's hanging, or, you know, Tim Mays's needing, you know, 10 days on the IL to deal with some elbow inflammation or something like that. Like, the building blocks are there for Garcia. Like, it's super high spin stuff, right? Like 95th percentile fastball spin. You know, it's a bunch of secondaries that have kind of become muddled. Like, you look at 2019 when he was really good, he basically went fastball curveball. Like, he leaned on the curveball a lot, and it was a really effective pitch for him, high spin obviously, and he just hasn't thrown the curveball that much since. It's sort of like peculiar. In 2021 he was like fastball slider, a couple curveballs, some changeups as well. Like, he just kind of looks like a guy who could really benefit from some adjustments to his pitch usage, maybe like just narrowing down the repertoire a little bit, paring things down. Like, dude, you pitch an inning, you don't need four pitches. You know, like, let's get you back to using that curveball to righties. Maybe we save the changeup for lefties, and maybe we like tighten up your slider into a cutter, as we've seen the Blue Jays do with a lot of pitchers of late. So, like, I just think there's a lot of like tweaks and adjustments that the Blue Jays could look to make with him there to actually get a bit more upside out of him and not have some of those like results that were kind of ordinary that you were referring to last season, actually get him back closer to the 2019 guy.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be huge. They could definitely use it. This bullpen is more good than great, even if you're projecting it optimistically. And so any kind of upside that you can find would be good. But, you know, I think as you look to this group, the reality is, as we see every year, some of these guys will be hurt on opening day. Some of them will be hurt on May 1st and June 1st and July 1st. And it's just that's always the case. So that's where I think, like, you do have to be out there signing more guys like David Faltz, which is perfect because, you know, 40-man spots are at a premium now, and he doesn't require one. So he's on a minor league deal. Great. He can come into camp, potentially make the team. That would bolster this roster. And I think even, you know, as the Jays are having these trade talks, whenever that's possible, if they are, let's say, talking to a team about an infielder, whether that's Jose Ramirez or Matt Chapman or Ketel Marte or even a smaller name, you know, that we haven't thought of, if they're talking about an infielder, maybe it's a good time to see if you can add an optionable reliever in that trade. Because if you can do that, then you have someone who isn't kind of stuck on the major league roster in the same way that a lot of these guys are. Then that gives you flexibility to do what most teams do, which is kind of bounce these guys back and forth.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think there is still, like, the Blue Jays should be aiming high, obviously. Like, they still should be engaging with some of the like best free agents. They should be trying to trade for like really premium dudes, right? Like the Martes and Chapmans and things like that before they start moving into the like, you know, maybe we do Randall Grichuk for Didi Gregorius tier or something like that, right? Like I think absolutely they should be setting their sights high, but you can't, like, I don't think they are beyond looking for value as well, right? And like, I think about the non-tender market, and there is always value on the non-tender market. We were just talking about it. Kevin Gausman was non-tendered just 2 years ago. Now he's out here signing a five-year, $110 million deal. Carlos Rodon and Kyle Schwarber last offseason, both non-tendered. Like, Justin Turner was non-tendered at one point. Like, so there are always dudes there. So maybe you can find somebody like from that tier, from that class that you are referring to, like, who is, you know, looks like an edge of the roster guy, but actually, you know, has some upside and has some ability. Maybe you can like get him right. Like, the name that stuck out to me immediately, like Matt Boyd was a big one that hit the non-tender market. Certainly that stuck out, but Chad Kuhl. And I know I've mentioned him before from the Pittsburgh Pirates. He just kind of fell out of favor there. Like, wasn't working as a starter for him. So it sort of started to make the shift to a relief role last season. Made some comments to the effect that he didn't love it, which is, yeah, which is tough. But maybe he will learn to like it on a shiny new deal with the Blue Jays, right? And maybe with like kind of the benefit of a full spring training to like truly commit to the role and like grasp the routines and learn everything that kind of that goes into it. We've heard plenty of starters talk about, you know, you listen to Ryan Barucki and guys like this, Julie Merriweather, talk about how difficult it is to shift to that bullpen role when you've been a starter your entire life. Thomas Hatch talked a lot about that when he was relieving for this team here's the thing, Chad. Cool. It's still a fastball in the mid to high 90s, and it's still a high spin curveball. It's a slider with like a 33% whiff rate. Like, you know, his numbers are a little bit ugly last season, but there was like a couple blow up spots in there that, you know, make those numbers look a lot worse than maybe they would have. So I would bet on the quality of his stuff and on embracing a new role. So I will be looking to see if there's anybody off this non-tender market that the Blue Jays kind of see as like, maybe there's somebody that we can fix up and that we can get back to being good. Because in 2022 and 2023, we are going to be looking back and saying, oh my God, that guy was non-tendered in 2021, just like we are about Kevin Gausman and, you know, Rodon and Turner and all these guys.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you've got to keep adding. That's the thing. Like, you can look at the pitching staff right now and say, this is a pretty decent pitching staff. And it is. Like, they have a good pitching staff. But at the same time, like, you always need more. You always need to be adding more good players. That's what the best teams do. I mean, it's, you look at the Dodgers and the fact that they can lose Kershaw and Scherzer and Ryu and Maeda and Dustin May to Tommy John, and yet they still have Buehler and Urias at the top of their rotation. They still have a good pitching staff. So that's the kind of depth that obviously teams are striving for. The Giants have done an exceptional job in not only, you know, developing guys like Logan Webb, but finding guys in free agency who are these bargains and bringing the most out of their skill set. And of course, not every team is at that level. The Blue Jays would aspire to be, but they absolutely need to keep adding. Like, it's just, you can never be complacent with pitching. And I'm sure every front office would agree with this. You just can't be complacent with pitching. But then it comes time to actually get some deals done and add some meaningful players to your team.
Yeah, and that could mean like a Kyle Seager or sure, a Brad Miller or somebody like that. It could mean somebody like more top of the market. Like, it's not, we just saw the Blue Jays have interest in Javi Baez, like obvious interest in Chris Taylor as well. Like, they haven't stopped pursuing, like, you know, pretty like meaningful infield upgrades via free agency. So like, maybe there is still a way to do that. Or like, maybe you're trading an outfielder to acquire your infielder and you're going out and getting a Seiya Suzuki or a Castellanos or a Conforto or whoever. Like, I think that a lot of the avenues the Blue Jays had to improve, that's kind of, we've been talking about it all offseason, is like how many different ways they can go. Not that many of the avenues have closed off with like Garcia and Gausman coming in and some of the names that have come off the board. Like, I think a lot of those avenues are still open. So it does, you know, I think there are still a lot of different ways the Blue Jays can meaningfully improve this team, because they have to keep improving it, because today they are not going to project to win more than 91 games, and they need to project to win more than 91 games at the end of this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely not right at that point, for sure. More work to be done. But yeah, I agree. I think they still have a lot of avenues that they can go down, and they can still trade. They haven't traded anyone this offseason, so they can trade without a doubt, and they can spend. I agree with you. I mean, there's no way that you talk to the Marcus Semiens and Robbie Rays and Corey Seagers if you have no intention of following up with potential offers or, you know, further discussions. Like, you're not going to waste those guys' time. And the Jays have been engaged on those top free agents very consistently. And we've seen, I mean, this calendar year, three contracts of $100 million plus. I think we're past the point of really doubting that this front office is willing and able to spend. So we're past that.
It's funny how like ho-hum it becomes when the Blue Jays sign a free agent starting pitcher to a $110 million deal. Like, that would have been shocking in 2016 or 17, right? That would have been like blown away, that like some of the Blue Jays have never done. And now they go out and they give Kevin Gausman $110 million, and it's just like, oh yeah, all right, what's next? Like, this is like, it's a massive move for this franchise. You think about these last 3 years: Ryu 80, Springer 150, Barrios 130. Obviously not a free agent, but like, that's money committed to a starter over 7 years. And now Gausman at 110. Like, this team is like spending like a big market team. Like, this team is like spending like, you know, like it should, like honestly, like it should have for a very long time. Like, it has the resources to. And like, I just think it's worth saying that like, the Blue Jays are spending money and trying to win the World Series next season. They are trying to win now. How many teams can say, like, that's what I was like complaining about over the first half of this podcast. Like, how many teams are trying to win now, today? How often in the franchise's history for the Blue Jays has it been the case where you could say, like, the Blue Jays are trying to win the World Series in the next calendar year? It's not that often that has happened. So like, everybody always goes like, oh, when are the Blue Jays going to go all in? They're pretty all in. Like, they are all in on winning. They're trying to win. So it's a pretty good time to be a Blue Jays fan.
Yeah, they're going for it. That's for sure. I mean, you think back to, you know, what some of the big signings were for the Jays as recently as a few years ago, right? And it would be like, Jaime Garcia, we got Jaime Garcia, or, you know, Steve Pierce is a Blue Jay. This is really exciting. We like Steve Pierce. Oh, okay. Nothing wrong with that. But it's really, yeah, it's been a step change for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. So plenty more to talk about after this little hiatus for MLB news, perhaps over the next, hopefully, just 2 months. We'll see. But we'll be back to talk about whatever's happening and whatever's in the air when it comes to MLB lockout, labor, Blue Jays, free agency, trades, all that, and so much more. His name's Ben Nicholson Smith. My name's Arden Swelling. I want to thank our producers, as always, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thank them for their time, as always, and thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on At the Letters.